Welcome to the latest Inside the Cross podcast. Today we have Noah Knopp, whose coming out story has been making the rounds on the internet. He published his story on US Lacrosse and Outsports, and it also ran here on Inside the Cross. The former Harvard lacrosse player is doing some great things as a teacher, and his story has definitely gotten a lot of reaction. Noah, how are you, and what's the reaction been to your story this past week and a half or so?
Thanks for having me on, Matt. It's been great. It's really been overwhelming, honestly. I've heard from so many people who read the article, and really more people read it than I expected. I thought it would be maybe a few hundred people or something like that. But it's been a lot of people, and I've heard from so many people that I've known over the years, just reaching out to say that they appreciated me writing the article, that it meant something to them, people that I hadn't spoken to, old teammates, people's parents, just so much positive feedback. So I was really, really happy and thankful to see all of that.
That's great to hear. And I imagine, you know, within your story, there was, you know, the struggle and the difficulty of, and I don't know if anxiety is maybe the right word for coming out as gay, whether it was to your family, to your teammates. This is another level of coming out to the world and kind of bearing your soul. So I imagine this was very difficult for you as well, or at least anxiety inducing. Can you talk maybe about why you decided to share your story with such a larger audience of people who don't even know who you were, people who may have seen your name? That's pretty soul bearing to kind of do that.
Sure. Actually, it wasn't so anxiety inducing to write the article. And I think part of that had to do with the reaction of my friends and family and teammates when I came out and all the support I received and how comfortable I've felt since then. And when it came to writing the article, I guess I had a lot of time over the summer, so that was certainly part of it. But it was something that I did have in the back of my mind from the time that I came out as something I might want to do. I feel a little bit of responsibility as one of the only out gay men in college lacrosse and in that world, just to speak up and share my story. When I think about myself as a teenager, what it would have meant to me to see a Division I player who was openly gay and writing about it and speaking about it proudly, it would have meant a lot. And that's the audience I had in mind when I wrote the article. With something like LGBTQ rights as well, I just look at how things have changed in the last several decades, and especially in the last several years. You know, the world was not always as accepting of LGBTQ plus people as it is today. And the reason for that was, you know, the activism and hard work of a whole host of people. So I feel a lot of gratitude for that, and almost a little bit of responsibility as well to do my part in keeping up that fight.
And I'm sure with the outpouring of messages you received and support, there are people who are gay, who are young, who have read your story and been inspired. Can you share a little bit about what maybe those responses have meant to you?
I think those are some of the most important ones for me. When I wrote the article, I had the lacrosse community as a whole in mind as an audience, but it really was mainly oriented towards young queer people who might not have thought about coming out publicly in lacrosse because of a whole host of reasons. So to hear people say, hey, this makes me feel more comfortable about who I am, this means something to me, that means a lot to me. And that was sort of my thought process as I wrote the article. You know, if this means something to one young person out there, then it's worth doing. And I'm glad I did it. And I'm glad that it has meant something to at least a couple people out there.
Can you talk a little bit about just how it practically came about with, did you approach someone at US Lacrosse or Outsports, and how did you kind of get the platform to do this?
Yeah, sure. So it was weird how it happened. If you remember, US Lacrosse published an article by Gabriel Chris over the summer, who's a young trans goalie. And I just thought that was awesome that he stepped up and wrote that article. And I just wanted to reach out to him and say, hey, I was a gay college player. You know, I loved your article. Keep it up. So I reached out to US Lacrosse and said, can you pass this note along to him? And they said, would you ever be interested in writing something? And I was. I said, sure. And they were very helpful. And Out Sports was great as well. So thanks to them for working with me on this.
Yes. So, you know, going through the article, there's a lot of things that are really, I don't know the word, but there's parts of it that are inspiring. There's parts of it that are surprising. There's parts, it goes through kind of a wide range of emotions. And there's definitely some things that certainly affected me, or at least piqued my interest when I was reading it. And obviously we're a lacrosse publication and, you know, we reach the lacrosse community. So a lot of the things of the intersection of lacrosse and your sexuality and your comfort level of coming out. And there's a few times you mentioned, you know, there's a line, the way people in lacrosse talk about being gay. And I think it's the culture of male sports in general is a lot of this, but can you share maybe some of your experiences where you felt as if it was tough to come out because of, you know, the way people act in the locker room or the things people say and maybe how that made you feel in the moment?
Yeah. I think that it's almost hard to perceive the culture of talking about being gay in lacrosse from an adult perspective. And I've become a teacher now, so I'm technically an adult, I guess, right? And I'm no longer cool, no longer in. But I would say that when you're in sort of the young person circle, homophobia is the vocabulary of day-to-day existence, right? It's how people describe things they don't like. It's how they describe things that they don't want to be. I think that it's almost not necessarily something that's even particularly thought about. It's just the norm. It's the norm. It's the way people talk. And that was true for me in athletic settings, and I think in most athletic settings from the time that I was a young kid, from the time that I was playing ice hockey in fifth grade is when I started to hear that language, before I even properly understood what it meant or what sexuality even was or sexual orientation. So that was sort of the world that I grew up in, and I think is the underside, the underworld of lacrosse, the locker room culture, the locker room talk. And it's hard to see from the adult perspective, from the coach's perspective to some degree, which is why I feel like it's important for us as coaches, and I'm hoping to get involved in coaching more and more, to be proactive about this kind of stuff and to bring voices in that are not typically included. And also to say, hey, you know, I know this language is how people talk, but it's not necessarily right, and we should think more about it.
Yeah, and one of the anecdotes you shared is some of your teammates when you were at Harvard, you know, came up to you and said, "Oh my God, I can't believe I said these things around you," and you had a level of, you know, you appreciated them apologizing, but even kind of you said you maybe even took part in some of those as you were maybe not as open about your identity. So for those people who maybe aren't hate-filled, but have said some hateful things, you know, what's kind of your message to someone of thinking twice before they speak and how they can maybe better themselves and be a better model in the locker room?
Yeah. This was something I thought a lot about as I wrote the article. To what extent did I want to talk about, you know, my own complicity in this homophobic culture? And in the end, I decided it was something that was really important for several reasons. First, because it was true. And I think that you're never going to be wrong for going with the truth and sharing the truth. And then second, because I didn't want to get up on the moral high ground and preach to the lacrosse community about what the right way to talk is. I felt like if I was honest about the fact that despite being a gay person, I had also been caught up in this culture of homophobic slurs and homophobic jokes and homophobic speech, if I was honest about that, it might make people more willing to reconsider their own usage of that language. So I would say that, and what I wrote in the article was the past does matter, but I'm much more interested in, you know, impacting the future and the present. And yeah, I might have done harm by, you know, speaking that way. It's not something that I'm proud of. It's honestly something that I'm embarrassed about and ashamed of to a certain degree. But, you know, we have control every day over what we continue to say, and how we continue to speak and how we continue to react to the speech of others. Right. So I think that, you know, if you've made remarks, if you've made comments that maybe you're not proud of, you know, you can always be better today. You can always be better tomorrow. And I think that, you know, stopping that kind of language, stopping that kind of talk will make a really big difference to a lot of kids out there, more than people imagine.
Let's talk a little bit about your sports and athletic background. You know, I remember first seeing you play at our Committed Academy event before you got into college. But when did you, you know, what sports did you play growing up? And when did you kind of pick up a lacrosse stick and decide that was kind of your sport?
Yeah, I started playing ice hockey when I was, you know, 5 years old or so, and played ice hockey growing up. Loved ice hockey. Also played soccer, a little bit of baseball, and was one of the many kids who play Little League and then get exposed to lacrosse. I think in fourth grade, one of my hockey teammates played and got me involved, and fell in love with lacrosse. And I played for Docs NYC, which was an awesome team out of New York City. And then around eighth grade or so, started playing with Long Island Express, and loved playing at that level. You know, was exposed to coaching that I hadn't had before, was exposed to, all kinds of talent, and was just in awe of how talented my teammates were and what an awesome team we had. So I stuck with them for a few years, started to realize around high school that, you know, perhaps I could play this sport in college. And fell more and more in love with the game. Coming from New York City is an interesting place to come from because you have to coach yourself a lot. So I would be out, you know, watching YouTube videos, trying to teach myself, you know, all these kinds of defensive footwork drills, working in the park with a foldable net that I had, playing wall ball on the handball walls in New York City, and was really, you know, so blessed and so fortunate to be recruited to Harvard. Coach Wojcik gave me that chance, and I'll always be grateful to him. And that was at the end of my sophomore year of high school. And then I also played a little bit with the Israeli national team, and took a few trips to Israel, which I enjoyed. And then spent 4 years at Harvard, which were fantastic.
Yeah, it's so many people who have that hockey background who, like, you know, just like you were. I was a hockey player and I played Little League, but someone on my hockey team told me about lacrosse and I ended up shifting into that. It's such a common story. That's my background as well, as I played hockey and ended up in lacrosse. There are a lot of barriers of entry to the sport, and one of them, you know, your sexuality and maybe how lacrosse is perceived is certainly one of them. And it's not just sexuality. There's certainly lacrosse's issues with race. There's, you know, lacrosse's issues with just the socioeconomic status that's attached to it. You know, you talk about being 14, you know, 16, 17, and grappling with your sexuality. And were there times when you thought maybe there's a culture that I don't want to be a part of, I'm going to kind of give up athletics?
No. And I think the reason why is because I think it would be more accurate to say I was not grappling with my sexuality. You know, I was just kind of not thinking too much. It's almost hard for me to get back into the mindset that I had as a teenager, because it's just so foreign to what I feel now after coming out. But I do mean it when I say, you know, the idea of coming out just wasn't a realistic or legitimate possibility in my mind. Until I got older, until I was in college.
You know, the one kind of scene that you outline in the story is you're brushing your teeth and you're whispering the words, "I'm gay." And it's the first time you said those two words out loud. Yeah. Can you describe that? That really just, like, kind of stopped me in my tracks when I was reading this. Can you describe that a little bit? Because it's just, I can't, you know, this is something that was part of your identity. You hadn't said it out loud. I just can't imagine the emotions you were going through at that point.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely an emotional time in my life. It was an epic time. You know, I felt like, I was on this big journey, and I was in many respects. I think, as an outsider or someone who hasn't gone through this experience of coming out, it might be easy to look at the situation and say, well, what's so hard? You know, you just tell people and they accept you and that's it. But really, you know, it was something that took many years of not thinking about and then thinking about it and then realizing it was possible for me to come to the conclusion that I was ready to do. And again, you know, the ideology of homophobia, I think, gets very ingrained into all of us and was ingrained into me to the point that it was so difficult for me to just say the words, I'm gay before. And from reading other people's stories and talking to other gay people, I know it's a common experience, right? When gay, the word gay is associated with all the things that you don't want to be. It's so hard just to get the words out. And for me, that was true. You know, in the mirror, I felt like it was important. And it was spontaneous, too. You know, it was just one night I was brushing my teeth and I thought, I've actually never even said these words before. So I just said, I'm gay in the mirror. And, you know, that was great. You know, it made me so proud and happy to do that. And then saying them to another person, you know, that was tricky, too. Hard to get the words out the first few times. But as I did it more and more, I started to feel more and more comfortable to the point now that it's something that I'm extremely proud to say. And always makes me smile to say. So it is funny how words take on a meaning to us and how saying them can be difficult, but also meaningful in many ways.
You told your Harvard lacrosse teammates, and you share the story, but kind of ahead of that, what was it about your teammates that made you feel okay and comfortable sharing this with them?
That's a great question. You know, from the moment that you step foot in a college lacrosse locker room, the level of camaraderie and brotherhood is just so strong. The friendship and mentorship that I felt from the older players on the team when I was young really helped bring me into the culture and the fold of the team. And it was really strong at Harvard. It was really strong. You know, our team does a lot of things together. We go through a lot together through hard practices, through hard workouts. We spend a lot of time together, the sheer amount of time. And I kind of felt like, you know, this wasn't something that my teammates would just accept. You know, I felt like it was something that I really wanted them to know about me. You know, I wanted them to see the full, you know, scope of myself. And I also wanted them to hear it from me, too. You know, I didn't want them to hear this news about me from someone else. You know, I wanted to be the one to tell them personally because I felt like it was something important. So, yeah, I felt really confident about that. And my teammates were so supportive. You know, the round of applause, the cheer that they gave me in the locker room was, you know, an amazing moment in my life and something that I'll always remember.
Was that reaction what you expected? Were you taken aback by it? You know, that it was like kind of a chills down your spine moment reading it of like, you know, they kind of exploded with applause. How much did that take you by surprise maybe?
Yeah, it totally took me by surprise. Not because I didn't expect it, but because I hadn't thought about it. You know, I just hadn't thought about how they would react in the moment and how it would all go down. But it was really an extraordinary day, and I'm very thankful to all my teammates for their support.
And like I told you when we started this, I was just on the phone with Jerry Byrne, who was your head coach. You know, you probably just met him just a few months prior, or at least got to know him more. I know he recruited you a little bit going to Notre Dame when he was there. But, you know, he explained that you told him as well, and then you told the team. What culturally maybe did Jerry bring to the table in terms of, you know, feeling acceptance with this?
Yeah, I knew Coach Byrne would be on board because I think Coach Byrne is very unapologetically himself as well and really wants people to be their full selves, you know, not to hide, not to conform. You know, I also knew that Coach Byrne, his first priority is who can play defense, who can play lacrosse, right? And that was actually what he said to me too. He was like, I care very much, you know, on a personal level about this news, and I'm very happy for you. But, like, on the lacrosse field, I don't care at all. Like, I just want you to be able to play defense. I want the guy who can play the best defense and help our team the most. So that was kind of what I expected from Coach Byrne, and that was what I got. And I definitely appreciated his support as well. You know, I knew that he would be there if I ever needed anything. And so was the rest of our coaching staff too.
He told me about your senior thesis about Vietnam and how it's portrayed in Hollywood. And, you know, he was just explaining that he's like, yeah, I read every word of it. Can you tell me about your senior thesis? I know it's a weird question, but sure, yeah. He was like extremely excited about it.
Yeah. So I wrote about how disabled Vietnam War veterans protested the war. So it was very much about like the image of the disabled veteran in the wheelchair and what their protest meant. You know, they protested the Vietnam War itself, but in many ways they were also protesting the culture of militarism and masculinity that was so prevalent in the U.S. before this war, right, in the aftermath of World War II. You know, these were people who had been through so much, lying in the VA hospital after surgery, right, in these inadequate hospitals, who went on to protest the government. And many of them, after enlisting in the military voluntarily, like Ron Kovic, who was a big figure, author of Born on the 4th of July, which became a Tom Cruise movie. You know, he went on to become almost a radical anti-war protester. And I thought that that change was really interesting. And I thought that the image of the veteran in the wheelchair, this gripping image of a disabled person, was really interesting as well. And the way that Kovic and others deployed their bodies as vehicles to protest the war was just a fascinating topic.
So now you're teaching history, is that correct?
Yeah,
that's right. Is there a certain subject matter or just general history that you're teaching right now?
I'm teaching a U.S. history course, so it's the full scope of U.S. history. We just finished a unit about the founding of the U.S., and we're moving on to the Civil War right now. But hopefully we'll get up to the 21st century as we move to the second semester.
So you've also mentioned at the beginning of this that you were interested in, you know, doing some more coaching. What are some ways that you intend to stay connected with the game? You know, because obviously lacrosse is a very big, important part of your life. How do you kind of intend in the future, and how are you presently kind of connected with the sport?
Yeah, so I'm coaching for 3D right now. A little bit. And that's been awesome working with 3D New England and some of my players there. Very receptive, really hardworking. I love the culture and the practices that 3D runs. So that's been really fun. And then I'm hoping to coach for Milton a bit as well. I think that we've got a good program here on the rise. I'm excited to be a part of that too.
You know, the sport of lacrosse, we've talked about some of the issues with the sport. You know, a little bit about solutions, just, you know, in regards to, you know, homophobia specifically, what are some of the things that maybe leaders in the sport, you know, us at Inside Lacrosse, US Lacrosse, but just down to an individual level, you know, what are things that people can do to help combat this and make the sport more inclusive?
Yeah, I think, you know, the first thing that many of us can do, many players, is to stop using homophobic language. And when people do use it, to just say, hey, you know, cut that out. That's not right. I think that that's a really key first step. And then I think another first step is also, you know, learning more about these topics and these issues. One of the things with lacrosse is that it's often connected with an academic institution of some kind. And many academic institutions have LGBTQ plus groups on campus. Not all, but many. And I think that, you know, trying to connect the lacrosse team, or if you're a coach, going to the LGBTQ people on your campus and saying, hey, what are some resources that I could bring to my lacrosse team, you know, to get them to understand these issues could be key. And I'll tell you as well, you know, just from my experience speaking with other educators, you know, with people from other parts of schools, people are looking at lacrosse and they're saying, what is this sport? You know, what is this sport that so many of our kids are playing? What's the culture of the sport? And I think that often educators do find to an extent that some of the young people who are not respectful of other cultures and other people sometimes come from lacrosse. So what is our response as a sport to that? You know, are we going to to take up the reins and start learning and start educating ourselves and holding ourselves accountable? Or will we kind of stick to the same old culture that we've had in the past? And I hope, I think that we will. I think that we will move to start thinking about LGBTQ rights. I think, you know, start thinking more about the Black Lives Matter movement. And so many Black people have spoken up over the summer in such powerful ways about that. And then the last thing about lacrosse that's so interesting as well is its origins as a Native American sport, right? And the complicated history of that. I think that maybe the ultimate end goal for lacrosse could be to try and reckon in some meaningful way with our origins as a Native American sport, and to be more of a sport that advocates for the rights of Native Americans and Indigenous people.
You know, you spoke of the article that maybe in some ways helped you write your article that, you know, was on U.S. lacrosse and outsports. With the past, I would say, 7 months, you know, kind of post-COVID and you know, with Black Lives Matter, there's been a number of, you know, issues with Native American, you know, their Olympic inclusion has been kind of a hot topic. There have been, within the sport of lacrosse, I don't know if it's a lot of looking inward because people can't play, but have you seen at least just some progress, some maybe willingness to discuss and talk about these things that maybe wasn't there before?
Yeah, I think so. I think so, for sure. And you know, it comes from a lot of publications, especially, right? Using platforms on Twitter, on social media, to amplify voices. It's come a lot from Black people this summer, right? From people like Jules Henberg, who wrote that awesome essay in U.S. lacrosse as well, speaking up, and so many others too. And it has seemed like people are eager to listen, right? Are willing to listen, are willing to learn new things. I've certainly learned a lot, you know, this summer, and George Floyd's death, I think for me, like for many other white people, was a kick in the pants. And I felt, you know, as a history teacher, that this was something that I had to double down on, you know, teaching about the history of racism in the U.S. and the history of resilience of people of color was something I had to double down on and really make a priority. So I think that many people in lacrosse are thinking more about these things.
For sure. And institutions, you know, like Harvard, you know, are probably in a position to take a leading role on all of these issues, you know, that you spend, I imagine you spent a lot of time, a lot more time with your teammates and your coaches than you did with a lot of your professors and teachers. That's kind of just the way that, you know, sports, I think a lot of people, their coach, sometimes they see them more than their own parents when they're growing up. They see them more than their teachers and even some of their best friends. I guess the question that this is all leading to is just, you know, we talked about the leaders in the sport, but particularly with the coach, how much can a coach set a culture and set a tone for their locker room, for their players, of inclusivity?
Yeah, I think coaches have a massive role. And as a coach, you know, I think what I'm starting to think about, you know, for my future teams is what will the impact of my team be on this campus, on this school? How are my players going to interact with their peers in all kinds of everyday situations? What are they going to do when they go out in the world? I think we all know sports have the potential to build all kinds of character and character values. You know, can we go beyond the traditional scope of things like toughness and resilience to start thinking about raising leaders in inclusivity? And I think, you know, if lacrosse can start to do that, it could be a really powerful thing. You know, the goal of all of this is not just to prove that lacrosse meets the criteria for political correctness or something like that, right? It's to actually have a sport that makes tangible differences for people. And that raises, you know, young citizens who are going to go out in the world and do the best that they can to make our society more just, more equitable, and more open to people who have historically been excluded.
Now you're kind of on the other side of, you know, colleges, and in many ways for a lacrosse player, it's the pinnacle. Playing college lacrosse is just so awesome. And, you know, as the pro leagues kind of Evolve College still has this kind of, you know, this is the place where all the attention in the lacrosse world is. Now that you're on the other side of that, you know, obviously I know your senior year kind of got cut a little bit short there with the COVID, and that sure wasn't the way you wanted that to end. But how do you look back on a career as a lacrosse player and now having gotten through college and the lessons and just the positive things that maybe came out of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard for me to even put it into words. The, I think, transformative nature of the college lacrosse experience. You know, when I think back to the kid, the 18-year-old kid that I was when I showed up at Harvard, and compare that to, you know, the person I am now and how much I've learned and how much I still have to figure out as well. It's night and day. You know, it almost feels like a different person was the kid showing up. I think I learned a lot about facing challenges. I was the captain of my high school team, as was almost everyone else on my Harvard roster, right? And everyone else was a distinguished recruit. And this is said so often that it becomes a cliche, but you know, everyone was the captain of their high school team in college, and everyone plays so hard in practice. The level of competition is so intense. You know, I was overwhelmed by that, and I thought I worked hard. Everyone worked hard too. So for my first 2 years, I really got run by almost every kid on our team in practice. You know, I went from being the lockdown cover man to being one of the worst on-ball guys on the team and being one of the least athletic people on the team. And I definitely got beat down by that psychologically. I think many people in college in their first 2 years don't realize the level of intensity that's expected, don't realize the level of competition that is present. For me, that was certainly true. And really, it prompted me to take ownership of my life in ways that I wouldn't have expected myself to do. It started for me when I was a sophomore, I think. One of my coaches said, hey, like, where do you want to be on senior day? And that was a question that I hadn't necessarily thought about. You know, what do I want to take out of this experience? What do I want to get out of it? And that prompted me to start to think more. And as I continued to get older, I thought, how can I take ownership of this experience? How can I take ownership of myself? You know, how can I face up to this challenge of being towards the bottom of the depth chart and hoping to be more of a contributor to our team? And I did my best, I think. I think I did my best as an upperclassman to do that, and actually played in a few games here and there. But really, it was facing that challenge that gave me the confidence that I was ready to come out to face this other challenge in my life that I hadn't necessarily considered taking on. So I give full credit to the experience of playing college lacrosse for that. And the other thing I'll say is the level of camaraderie that you feel on a college lacrosse team is hard to match in other areas of life. So I miss it very much, miss all my teammates, and it was great.